Yeah. All right. Trying something new today. What do you think of the intro? I'm actually going to put that in there. So you just heard an intro. Man, I don't know if you guys know, like, I'm sure that you don't know a lot about me, but one of my most favorite kinds of music, without question, is synthwave. I've said this before. I've talked about it before. I really, really, really dig some good old synthwave music. I love the 80s, man. I mean, it was, you know, I lived in that era as a kid. I was born in 1972. So I grew up, for the most part, my young adulthood was all in the 80s. Went to high school in the 80s. I graduated in 1990. So literally, I mean, the bulk of my youth was all the 80s. I don't count the 70s because, I mean, you know, by 1980, I was 8. So, you know, that's when really everything started for me and for most people. You know, you get into your real life at that point. But man, I really dig that vibe. I don't know what it is, if it's the nostalgia at this point in my life. You know, I mean, I used to listen to my father. He always liked to listen to stuff from the 50s and the 60s because that's his era. So I think I finally reached a point where the 80s are my era. And I really dig what it sounds like, man. It's a really good vibe and lots of fun for me. And well, welcome to the Bipolar Podcast on this fine Saturday morning. I find myself oddly alone. So I figured I'd do another one. What the heck, right? My kids and my wife and my kids are off pickling pickles or making, canning, jarring pickles, whatever you call that. So they're out doing their thing and I'm here doing my thing. Trying really to maximize all the time I have left because, ta-da, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I found out yesterday that my background check, all my references, and my drug screen all came back, as I knew they would. I mean, I wasn't, like, worried about that. But, you know, I like to make sure that everything's in order before I go and shoot myself in the foot. So next week, at some point, I'll have to give my notice to my current employer. Ha-ha, fuck you, man. Sorry, I know I'm doing weird voices. You know, it'd be really fun is to be like a voice actor. I don't know that I could do funny voices. Like somebody'd have to tell me like what kind of voice they might want for a character, but I think that'd be pretty fun. On that same note, I don't know if the ACX thing I had mentioned, this guy reached out to me and I did the audition and now the audition is down. So I don't know what's going on with this thing, man. I keep thinking like it's going to work out and then it just doesn't. So I have no idea what's going on with that thing right now. Weird though, right? I mean, like reached out specifically to me to say, hey, we want you to audition. And well, let's see. Let me check my messages. Yeah, it says right here. Title you audition for Conflict Resolution 101, Techniques to Enhance Skills for Managing and Resolving Everyday Conflicts, has been removed by the author and is not accepting new auditions. A producer for this project has not yet been selected, so you may receive further notifications for this title in the future if it is reopened for auditions or if casting decisions are made. Meanwhile, there are still plenty of audiobooks looking for the right producer, and that could be you. What the fuck, man? I mean, I don't get that. Did you not like the audition? Or, I mean, what the, you know, I don't know. That's kind of weird. Anyway, that's weird. I don't know. I don't know why you would go through all the trouble of doing that. Ask somebody, reach out, put the thing up there on the platform and then take it down. I mean, I guess maybe he didn't like it. I don't know. My samples that I put up there for demo purposes on ACX are me. They're not something else. And they're recorded using the exact same equipment. I have a regular setup that I use for everything at this point. So every broadcast, every kind of voiceover, every podcast, everything I do is the same. And I think that's important because, you know, when you do a book like this, you're not necessarily sitting there the entire time, you know, like for 3 straight hours doing a book recording. It takes a lot of, it can take more than one take and lots of different days and stuff like that. So you don't want to come back and have different settings and different levels and things like that. So to be more professional, I have a stock setup that I use that I've created for all my plugins in a chain, the mastering chain, all that kind of stuff. So that's why all these podcasts sound the same now, because other than my voice, potentially, depending on the time of day or, you know, how I'm feeling or whatnot, depending on what my voice sounds like, that's the only variable that's in any of these, is that if I do it early in the morning, my voice has a tendency to be a little bit deeper. If I do it later in the day, it's a little more raspy because it's kind of a little more worn out from having spoken or talked or whatever I did all day long, and I'm more awake. So my vocal cords are not as deep and, I don't know, deep, whatever that means. But yeah, so I guess that's not going to happen. And I guess that's fine because, you know, in reality, once I start this new position, this is, again, it's not a work from home type job. So I'm going to be out of the house for, you know, let's see, 50 hours a week, probably, I would gather, somewhere around that. So even these podcasts will have to be rescheduled in terms of when I do them. So the nice thing is I did check with Anchor, and you can, on their platform, record stuff in advance. So I could do like a couple of podcasts in a row and just schedule them for when I want them to be released. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, what did you guys think of that intro? I kind of dig that. I was just screwing around the other day and I was working on a new tune, and I came up with this little, that keyboard part, and I'm like, wow, this actually doesn't sound that lo-fi. This kind of has like an 80s vibe to it. And I went and just slowed it down to 84 beats per minute. And then I added that four on the floor kick drum, you know, like that basic beat like that. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, this is a synthwave song. Where are my arps and where are my arpeggios and where am I going to put all this other stuff? So I actually constructed it into a little snip, and I'm not sure what I'll do with that song. I would expect that I'll work on it and make it into a real track. I mean, that's just a raw sketch. Of what that track is. It's all the parts that I played. So typically at least when I create a song, I start like that. Like I build it up to about 8 or 10 tracks of stuff that I like. And I'm like, okay, I got a good foundation here. This is going to work for a song. And then I start figuring out how I want to make it sound interesting, because you can't just take a loop like that and play it for 2 minutes. I mean, I guess you could, but that's not really that enjoyable for the user. So, you know, there'll be an introduction that's like 20 or 30 seconds where things kind of build up, and then it kind of like will drop into, they call it a drop. It'll drop into the main section, and then kind of in the middle, you change it up and you take things in and out or add different parts. So, you know, by the end, you get like this 40 or 50 track thing of, you know, this wonderful composition. And I try to keep all my tracks under about 3 minutes because quite frankly, I don't think people spend 3 minutes listening to songs. And I know this sounds kind of shitty, but, I'd rather you re-listen to the thing over and over and over again than listen to 1 6-minute long song. It's not dance tracks, right? These aren't something you're going to hear in a club where the DJ wants to have this epically long thing that they can use to mix songs in and out of. So this is just something you're listening to. So I come up with like pretty much a singular idea when I write songs like that. That's a singular idea. And then I'll try to, you know, I'll go in there and add the creativity, like I'll probably add some percussion to it, some drum fills and things like that from the 80s, you know, like those 808, like, you know, those cool drum sounds that were big back then. And, you know, some like cymbal crashes on the downbeats or on the up and the two. I like to do some interesting things, maybe change the snare up in certain parts, take some of the oomph out of it and just have just the kick drum go by itself underneath, remove the bass, you know, all this. You basically just go in there and edit something. So once you have a cool idea like that, you can go in there and do whatever you want with it and turn it into this longer, fuller, more completely fleshed out idea. And there's your song. Now on stuff like this, I don't normally put horns, so I don't have any of that. I was actually thinking about putting a really cool, like an 80s guitar part though, where it's like a muted, like a palm muted, like that. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I know you know what I'm talking about, but that 80s type guitar. So I might put like a staccato-y kind of palm mute 80s guitar sound in there as well to give it more of an organic vibe. Because, you know, all the keyboards that I use, they're analog emulators. The only real keyboard I have is a Korg Mini Log, which is a true plug it into the wall. It's a physical thing that's a pure analog synthesizer. But everything else I use is like, so everything you, that none of that was the mini log. Everything you're hearing there are, synthesizers. They're called VSTs. They're software emulations of synthesizers. So I use the Arturia suite, which is got just, well, I have Spire. I have a lot of keyboard stuff. I've probably got like 50 of them, but I use the Arturia stuff the most because for me, it's just, it's got the biggest, the fattest. I mean, if I'm looking for a bass, I have like an OBX-1. I have a couple other things that are really good for that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I go right to Arturia for their, I think they have their Analog 5. Is it 5 or 7? I don't know. Some version of, I forget which one it is, but they're really nice because I like using them because they're standalone as well. So if I were to ever want to play any of this synthwave type stuff or this lo-fi stuff out live, I can actually just take my laptop and my controller and I can play any of these keyboards that I use in these songs as standalone instruments. They open up as a piece of software on their own. So you don't have to open them. A lot of the stuff that you use, just to explain this to anyone that doesn't know what I'm talking about, a lot of stuff you use inside of your digital audio workstation, which is a piece of software, it is called a plugin, which means it only works based on the framework of the digital audio workstation, which I'll now abbreviate as DAW. So now you know what I'm talking about. So in the DAW, you know, that provides the software programmatic framework for other things to work. But with Arturia and lots of others, there's others out there too. Arturia has the ability where you can just load up a Prophet 5 synthesizer right on your screen without your digital audio workstation being open, and you can just play it like a keyboard. So it's really, really pretty cool. You can do a lot of standalone stuff with that. So it's great for live, in my opinion. And I haven't really done this stuff live, but that's really kind of why other than the fact that their stuff sounds just outstanding. I mean, it's inspired. Like I judge stuff by level of inspiration. And that's one of the things I do, even with my horns. It's like, how do I pick a horn that I like the best? It's like, I can pick the thing up and it inspires me to play really well. That's a horn that I dig. You know, sometimes you pick up an instrument or a guitar or something, and it's just not the right, like for me, Stratocasters, I love the look and the vibe of a Stratocaster, but because of the way the knobs are set up and the way I put my hand on the bridge on a guitar, I can't play that guitar well. I play Les Paul guitars really well, or Epiphone style, like those bigger ES-335 style guitars, because they have the tune-o-matic bridge that kind of moves your hand away from the pickup. I don't know, it's just the way my hand sits on that guitar makes me able to play it a lot better. And that inspires more creativity and more exciting stuff. Same thing with the horn. If I can pick up a horn and not miss notes and just blow into it and cool things just happen, I have a tendency to lean toward that instrument. So that's a huge part of it. And, you know, with these Arturia software synths, man, I mean, you just play a note on them and it's just all of a sudden creativity explodes in your head of like, holy shit, I could do some really cool stuff with that. So really, really interesting. And they did a really good job, but I wouldn't consider their stuff entry level price wise. It's several hundred dollars to buy their suite. Which isn't a ton of money. I mean, considering when I was a kid, I bought an FM, a real solid, you know, a physical FM synthesizer. It was like $1,200. A Yamaha V50 is what I had to start with. So, you know, a few hundred bucks is a far cry from $1,200. But, you know, again, you're not getting the real deal. But for me, you know, if I really want these things to be real, I can run them through my outboard compressors. I can run them through tube equipment. I have all kinds of neat stuff I can do, but, you know, as well as thousands of plugins to run these through to make them sound fatter and bigger and or grimier or give them an effect or whatever. It's, you know, it's really cool in that regard. So I dig that stuff. So anyway, I use the Arturia suite of software synths for a lot of stuff. I like them a lot. Really cool. Anyway, so what'd you think of that intro? I mean, I guess I should make this whole thing about the 80s and why I dig the 80s so much, but I even love like the aesthetic. Like, I think I look stupid in 80s gear because I'm such a big person. Like, I don't look good in like neon and some of the baggy stuff because I'm too fat. I mean, it looks much better on thin people. But overall, I'm a real fan of that era. That stuff really kind of, I don't know that, like I've said before, this revival of, you know, this synthwave generation, like my favorite artists are Home and H-O-M-E. So look that up. And Allison, A-L-I-S-O-N, but there's a period. So it's A period, L period. You get what I'm saying. But they're really, really good. And, you know, they have millions and millions of streams too. So it's not just me saying that. They're really good. I dig their stuff quite a bit. I'm actually a fan. So, you know, I really like listening to it. There's just such a vibe to the music that they make that I really think I hit with this intro. Like, because, you know, I've told you before, I have a whole artist called Solar Cities that I've put out, like, I don't know, 25 songs or something like that, that are doing absolutely nothing. But they really sound a lot more legitimately from the 80s than nostalgically from the 80s, right? So the vibe of synthwave today is much more like, make it sound kind of like a cruddy old VHS tape. Then, like I've explained before, you know, what we're emulating today did not sound like shit in the 80s. It was done on beautiful analog equipment. And, you know, these guys went in and had huge budgets, just like rock bands did, to make, you know, like Depeche Mode, New Order, Information Society, Yaz, you know, play these big bands, The Cure even. I mean, you could argue, even though they were more a traditional band, you know, they're from that, you know, like Thompson Twins, Cyndi Lauper, Corey Hart, all these bands from and artists from that era, they were the real stars. They weren't like some underground shit musicians. These guys were the pop stars of that era. So they went in with these huge budgets to record music at the highest quality. They weren't trying to make it sound like shit. It was just the vibe that came out of that era of technology is what it sounded like. You know, and by today's digital standards, analog is a very different animal. You know, I mean, when you're recording something to a physical tape, as opposed to recording it into zeros and ones, which is what you do in a computer, you know, there's an algorithm that interprets the analog properties or the waveform properties of even my voice right now as I'm recording this. It's all going digital. So, you know, there's some interpretation that takes place in the computer, the analog to digital conversion range. There's actually a lot of different conversions that take place. So there's one from my voice to the input device that I'm using that does the actual and literal conversion. And then the representation of that conversion in the DAW, the digital audio workstation, that then becomes the audio that you then use to mix and manipulate and add effects to. And that becomes part of what you're recording. So in its purest sense, you know, what you're hearing in this podcast is my raw voice, but it has gone through at least two physical transformations from analog to digital. And then, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like 9 different analog plug-in emulations of like EQ and compression and denoising, de-essing, you know, all these cool effects, and then a mastering console with more EQ, and then a low hum noise remover, and then finally a final level limiter. So there's a lot that goes into this, and I've said this before. It's not like, you know, you wonder why, if you go back and go far enough back into this podcast and listen to the stuff I did prior to that, it sounds like crap. I mean, it's just, you know, that was me using earbuds and an iPhone. You know, and in out of context, it's fine. Like if that's all you ever listen to, whoop-de-doo. But once you listen to a full production on a broadcast system, like what I'm explaining right now, I mean, there's just no comparison. It sounds so much better. And I've said this before, even if the things that I'm saying are just stupid, the quality of the sound in which that I'm using now to deliver this is so much better that it's even nice just to listen to it. You know, you're getting it's as if you're sitting right here with me. And I would argue that, you know, I have thousands of dollars worth of equipment that's helping me do this. So you definitely don't need it. If you have compelling content and you do great stuff, I've seen plenty of stuff on TikTok that's done purely with, you know, an iPhone, you know, and then you can see the guy's got the headphones in or the girl's got the headphones and they're like holding the microphone right to their face and they've got hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views of their little, whatever that's called, on TikTok, their little TikTok video, you know. But at the same time, I mean, there's really no comparing that. And if you look at some of the best TikTokers that are out there, if you wonder why their stuff looks so good, it's because of all the things I'm explaining to you. They're not using their iPhone for everything, right? They might be using it for the video because arguably the camera on an iPhone is high enough megapixels that it looks really good. But if you ever notice, if you're looking at someone's eyes and you see, it looks like they're brighter, there's a lit ring around their eyes, they're actually using a special kind of ring light that's in front of them behind the phone that shines a perfect amount of light onto their face. So you get this extraordinarily beautifully clear 4K envision of your video on your iPhone, because you got to remember its source is everything, right? So if you've got crap going in, even if I take digital, which I'm recording at 48 kilohertz, 24 bit quality, which is super high quality. That is perfect digital. It's got no noise. It's just absolute perfection. If I put a distorted piece of shit sound into this, it's still going to sound like shit. I mean, it's not going to make it sound better. So my point is, if you have crappy lighting and a lousy environment in, you know, like most of my TikToks, because in my studio directly above my, I'm pointing and you can't see any of this, but I'm pointing above my head, directly above my head is a ceiling light. And it's a UV style light. So it's an LED light. So it's good lighting, but it's in the wrong place. It's behind me. So it's when the phone looks at me, it focuses mostly on that light and it shuts its iris, you know, the lens more so that less light can get in because it's getting a blast of light. So it ends up making me look like shit because the light's on the wrong side of the camera. Technically, the light needs to be coming from behind it and shining onto me so that the camera can pick up the most clean, perfect picture that it can. So I'm doing it totally wrong. And that's why my TikToks look like shit. But unfortunately, where I'm sitting in my studio, that's where that friggin' light is. So I kind of have to turn myself. And you'll notice sometimes there'll be different things in the background, but that lighting is what's killing me. And I don't have a good lighting setup. And quite frankly, I don't, you know, I have nothing going on TikTok and people don't care about my videos. So it's not like it matters. I'm spending all of my time and effort on the audio component of this, that, you know, it's a podcast. I'm not videotaping and I'm not doing what Joe Rogan's doing where he has a video. I'm just doing an audio podcast. But yeah, my point is that, you know, don't be fooled. People have, you know, these people that have millions and millions of followers are making real money doing this, and they have real equipment too. Oftentimes they have a production assistant. You know, maybe it's their boyfriend, their girlfriend, whomever. It could be an actual hired employee, but they have someone that takes these photos and sets the camera up and gets everything right. Or maybe, you know, it's kind of like if you've ever watched iCarly, you know, how Freddie was the tech geek behind that show. I mean, that actually matters. That's, you know, what you see on television and in movies, you know, there's hundreds of people that are doing the production that makes everything look like what it does so that when they get it into the editing suite, they can make it look amazing and add the CGI and do all this other crap. But you still got to get the right angles with the camera and have the right lighting and the right everything. You know, it's a real thing. I mean, they used to really rely on the outdoor stuff for that, but, you know, and they still to some degree do that. But for the most part now, everything is done with CGI because it's so indistinguishable from reality. You can make things that look real that just aren't. They're a green screen, you know. I bet that's harder for an actor or an actress to really work with because, you know, you're trying to imagine like a dinosaur or some crazy shit going on behind you and there's nothing there. So I would gather that it made their job a little harder than the reality of it, but, than having it actually happening behind them. But it also opened up, you know, a new world of all these different things that you can do that you could never do before. So really cool stuff, but you know, I mean, I guess this is kind of a technical geeky little episode today, but I really wanted to get into, you know, really explain the synthwave because of course I have, you know, my intro and I don't know. We'll see how it goes. If I get like a sudden drop in listenership, I'll take them out. But I really, you know, I've tried this before. I wanted to have like an intro kind of thing. But I just love this little snippet that I've come up with so much that I actually want to use it. And I'm kind of cheating today. I wanted to do a podcast, not only because I'm alone, but because I had that little snippet that I created yesterday and I wanted to try it in a podcast like immediately. Because as I've said before, you can hear it in my voice. I'm getting all wound up. I have little to no patience, so I like to just put stuff out there immediately. If I could podcast for hours, I would, but I don't think that I've reached a point where I have enough good stuff to say. But I mean, I think about things all day long and I'm like, ooh, I should go podcast. Ooh, I should go podcast. But, you know, again, it's not always about, what I should be doing. It's sometimes it's about, you know, less is more. And I'm still trying to learn that lesson in life, you know, and I'm really, let me share something with you with regard to this new job. I'm really, this is going to be hard, but I'm really, really, really going to try with all my might to go into this and act in a different way than I did at the last time around. Because I'm going to try to learn from my mistakes. I don't think what I just did recently and for the last 18, 20 months, whatever it's been, it was unsuccessful, right? I'm no longer in that position. I was demoted. Nobody wants to deal with me. There's something that I did, whether they're clowns or not, no matter how much I disparage them or how much I criticize them or make fun of them or just use profanity against them, some part of this is my responsibility and is my fault. And I have to own that. And I think it's so important because I say this a lot, even to my kids, you got to own your shit, man. I got to own the fact that something that I did didn't work. And yes, I can still argue that, yeah, maybe it's just the simple fact that I was in the wrong environment around the wrong people, that my own style didn't really mesh well and work and turn out successfully here. But at the same time, I have to be responsible and I have to be mature about this and say, look, something I did for sure contributed to this. In a huge way, most likely, right? So I want to go into this new opportunity and be not a different person. I'm not going to fake it. I'm not going to, because I can't do that. I'm not going to not be me, but I'm going to try to be a better me, right? I'm going to try to really apply because I have a fresh start here. This is a new opportunity, new people. They don't know me other than the few conversations we've had. And arguably they've already said, wow, you're a very strong personality. So I already put that out just accidentally or just naturally. So what I want to do is I want to not come off as being the bull in the china shop. And I want to be a much more humble and approachable kind of person or approachable kind of leader. I want people to want to come to me and I want to listen more and speak less. Or when I do speak, have profundities. Ooh, there's the word of the day, profundity. I should use that. Let me go look that up and tell you exactly what that means before I hack it to pieces myself. Okay, ready? Profundity, deep insight. Great depth of knowledge or thought. Ooh, I like that word. That's a good one. If you didn't get that, some synonyms would be wisdom, intelligence, acuity. I like that word too, acuity. Depth, that's a good one. Great depth or intensity of a state, quality, or emotion. Yeah, profundity, that's a cool word. It's even fun to say, probably because it has fun in it. Anyway, what the hell was I just talking about? Hang on, let me figure that out. Okay, yeah. So what I'm getting at is I want to be seen and experienced for all that I really can bring. And delivery is such an important part of that. And you know, second to that is, you know, or maybe arguably first, is understanding your audience. You know, and I've claimed in my past to be good at this, but I don't know that I really am based on some of the experiences that I've had of late. Maybe I'm not as good at that as I think I am, and I have some work to do. And I'd really like to get better at this. And that's, again, why one of the reasons I wanted to take this opportunity was not just for the simple fact that it's, you know, a leadership opportunity, but in fact, because it is, I actually want to do that. That's something I'm interested in getting better at and learning more about. Not so much the technology. You know, I'm like, I'm kind of reached a point with the technology where it's not that I don't want to learn more. It's just that it's a lot of brain power to do it. All right. So let's get back to the synthwave component of this whole podcast. Just 20 minutes of rambling on and on and on. So if you go to like Wikipedia, there's a lot of information that I didn't know about this. Synthwave is an electronic music subgenre that is based predominantly on the music associated with action, science fiction, and horror film soundtracks of the 1980s. I guess I knew that. Other influences are drawn from that decade's art and video games. Yep, probably knew that too. Synthwave musicians often espouse nostalgia for the 1980s culture and attempt to captivate the era's atmosphere and celebrate it. Yeah, so like even the videos that I've done for the songs that I've done have all that like 80s kind of gamer, you know, like I associated a lot with, and I'm surprised it didn't say anything here, It's just action, science, and science fiction and horror film. But I would definitely, there we go. Sorry. Other influences are drawn from that decade's art and video games. Yeah, I was going to say, where are the arcades in this? Because arcades are absolutely essential to synthwave and that 8-bit crusty kind of awesome sound. But here's something that really got me. And this makes a lot of sense because I'm a huge fan of GTA 5, but it looks like the genre developed in the mid to late 2000s through French house producers, as well as younger artists who were inspired by the 2002 video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Wow, that's really cool because, you know, obviously like Blade Runner, films like that are in here, but really cool. You know, and I'm definitely a fan of GTA, more so 5. I mean, that's the game I love. I love the characters, all that kind of stuff, but there's a lot of cool synthwave in there and there's just some kind of vibe about that game that to me evokes like this synthwave thing. It's actually considered a micro genre, which is a little disappointing because you want to be a major genre, right, in music. If you want it to be popular and known and, you know, like a household kind of name, a lot of people don't know what the hell synthwave is. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Tron. Like in my studio, I have all the Tron characters, the little dolls, you know, in the boxes and stuff. And I'm real big into the original Tron. I love Tron Legacy too, but I'm still a big fan of the original Tron. So synthwave is a really, yeah, there it is. There it is by definition. It's definitely an 80s evoked scenario. I guess it's also called cold wave music, minimal wave, dark wave. That's interesting. I never really associated those types of things. But again, when you start to microgenre a music, there can be, you know, tons and tons of different little subgenres that kind of come off of that are the music that, you know, you end up digging. But I think that does music a disservice, to be quite frank, because it becomes more and more segregated and it's harder to find. And, you know, now what do I call my stuff? You know what I mean? Like, I think it's synthwave. Maybe it's retrowave. Maybe it's vaporwave. You know, I don't know. Downtempo, electronic. I mean, there's so many subgenres. Chill out, lo-fi. You know, there's. I don't like the fact that you have to kind of compartmentalize it in that way because that's sort of the exclusivity of it. Kind of, you know, like when I grew up in this era of the 80s, like. You know, pop music was a huge range, a huge spectrum of different kinds of music. You had rock in there, you had ballads, you had electronic music, you had folk style music, you had, you know, all kinds of, there was some instrumental stuff in there. There was like Kenny G was in there. I mean, there was all kinds of, you know, there's like a kind of like a smooth jazz kind of thing. I mean, There was a real wide spectrum of music that was available in the pop genre. Now, basically, pop is rap. You know, I mean, it's all boiled down to like kind of one sound. And you can yell at me and bitch at me all you want about that. But from my perspective, seeing the diversity of artists that used to be out there in popular or commercial music, it is not what that is now. You know, all these different genres are kind of pigeonholed into one very, very similar sounding thing. Everybody has a similar sound. You know, they're different artists, but it's all the same shit, just regurgitated. And it's pretty disappointing because that really puts a lid on what you're going to be, you know, what the masses are exposed to in the sense that hundreds of millions of people are going to hear the same crap on the Billboard Top 100 or if that even exists anymore, whatever that is. It's definitely not, you know, it was really cool to hear The Weeknd, a popular mainstream artist, do like a synthwave style song. I thought that was really cool. I'm not a big fan of his, my wife is, but I'm not a real big fan of him as an artist, other than he's got kind of like a nostalgia toward Michael Jackson, in my opinion. But I really enjoyed the fact that he kind of popularized the synthwave sound because that subgenre is such a small little nothing that people don't really know what it even is when you say it, unfortunately, but very cool stuff. Anyway, yeah, that was my take on synthwave from a definitions standpoint. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, the real conundrum, and I know I always use that word of the day, conundrum, for me is why do we have to put music into genres at all? I mean, you know, I understand generally speaking that, you know, you can be a fan of rock music, but we seem to do things in society that really just create divides. Why do we do that? Is that to be unique and individualized? Or like, for a guy like me, I like rock, metal, hip hop, pop, R&B, funk, soul, rap, jazz, classical, avant-garde, Americana, country. I mean, I like all of that stuff. So why is it that we have to be pigeonholed into like a, well, if you like metal, and this is really common. If you like metal, you can't like pop. You're not a real metal fan if you like pop. That's such bullshit. I love Slipknot, and I love like Black Tongue and Suicide Silence and some of these real heavy, dark, sludgy, slashing, you know, menacing kind of metal bands. But I also can get into Michael Jackson, and I also can get into Miles Davis and Wynton Marsalis and Chris Botti and Adam Rappa and all these, you know, this huge spectrum of stuff. Why am I pigeonholed? You know, I can't just be a regular person that likes metal, or I can't just be a regular person that likes hip hop and rap. You can only like that? It's weird. It's like you got to like associate. It's kind of like what's going on in our society today. You're either a Trump or a never Trump kind of a thing, right? You're either a Democrat or a Republican. There's no crossing of the lines, man. There's no blending. There's no, you know, kind of halfway in between. It's either all or nothing. And that is really fucking up our society big time right now, or for the last, you know, period of time. It's really causing a huge, huge problem. I mean, because I would argue that most people are not definitively one thing or another. Very few people are hard-nosed. You are a hard or an alt-left or an alt-right, and everything that the other side says is wrong, period. Because it's just bullshit. You can't take a stance like that because it's not true. Right? There are plenty of things that are said on one side or the other that are true, as are plenty of things that are said on one side or the other that are false. So you, by nature of that conundrum, you have to sit somewhere in the middle, because there's just no way that you can sit there and go, yeah, the earth is flat, the earth is flat, the earth. Well, there's a lot of compelling evidence that says it's not. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, let's have a discussion. And I said this the other day, I brought this whole thing up, you know, having a discussion. Where did the debates go? Why do we not have these kind of open and honest and sincere debates over these topics? Why is it it's either you agree with me or fuck you? That's how I feel like our society is today. If you don't agree with me, you're wrong. Fuck you. I don't like you. We can't be friends. I mean, how many friendships can you say that you may have lost, or connections that you've lost on social media over political crap? Somebody that you may have known for 20, 30 years, you have a difference of opinion on politics, and now you're not friends anymore? That's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. That's crazy. You're a different person. You're not going to have the same beliefs, and you should be able to have healthy discussions and debates about these things and learn from each other. Isn't that the point? Like, if somebody believes that Donald Trump is the end-all be-all, I'd like to hear why you think that. And then let's put that up against the facts. And if they're true, I'm happy to concede. But if they're not, I hope that you'd be willing to listen to my side as well. And I'm not a Trump or a Biden supporter. I think they're both complete ass clowns, just in their own way. Because all these rich elite fucks that are out there running the countries and running everything out there are all a part of the same team. They're all a bunch of clowns. They're all disconnected and dissociated from what it is that I need as a regular citizen in this country. They don't give a shit about me. They don't give a shit about what I need, what I want, what I think. They just want my vote so they can keep their stupid ass job stealing money from everybody. That's at least how I feel about it. I mean, I wish I had a job where I could just get free, unlimited amounts of money for free for doing a terrible job. You could argue that there's not a single freaking person in our government that's doing a good job. Who is it? Somebody tell me who's doing this amazing job, turning things around, making things clear, getting out in front of it all, trying to make sense of it, trying to make things work between the two parties. Nobody's doing that. Who's doing that? If they're doing it, they're not showing it on TV or on news or on the internet. I don't ever see it. And maybe I'm just ignorant and I don't see enough, but that should be the most important thing that we see right now, is how to unite this nation again. not keep dividing it, whether it's over masks or vaccines or not taking vaccines or this, that, or the other thing. Any number of things, you pick it out. You know, I mean, how many videos do you got to see where people were saying, don't take the vaccine when Trump was in office, and now they're basically going to mandate that you take a vaccine or you can't go do shit? It's the same vaccine. So what difference does it make if Trump administered it or Biden administered it? I mean, it's just, it's insanity. It's totally fucking crazy. What are people thinking at this point? Do they not realize what the internet is and that you, all this shit has been recorded? You can go back and watch it all. I mean, there are countless videos of all these clowns telling you that you have to take a vaccine or you're not going to be able to do this. And we need vaccines, or you're going to have a vaccine mandate and a passport and all this stuff. And there's all this contradicting information of showing them saying that it was the wrong thing because Trump was promoting it. So now we're just supposed to believe that the thing that Trump was promoting that was bad while Trump was promoting it is now good because Trump isn't promoting it and that another person is promoting it. I mean, think about that. Think about the stupidity of that. And if you don't think you're being duped, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I'm just looking at facts. These people are fucking assholes. They're totally lying about everything. And that's just absolutely a shame. This has nothing to do with synthwave, but apparently I've gone off on one of my many tangents that I often do on this podcast. And now I'm talking about something totally different, but let's just listen to synthwave music. It makes you feel good inside. It makes me feel good inside anyway. But I mean, really, like, this whole thing is just a joke, and it's not funny. We don't have quality information being delivered to the mass public now at all from anyone. It is all contradictory, and it is all agenda-based. I mean, what is the agenda now? Why do I need to take this? I mean, I've taken the vaccine, right? I took it a long time ago. So none of this actually affects me. I'm vaccinated. Now, that said, I'm not taking another one. I'm not going to get a booster. I'm not going to do any of that, because if there was anything that this thing did to me, I'm not going to help them do more of it to me. I'm hoping that really it was sincere and this thing will actually help me against COVID. I don't know if it will. Seems like it's, you know, these new reports coming out all the time that the vaccine doesn't work, and who knows? I mean, but that's my point, is that we got to get to a consensus where there is, the actual truth comes out and everyone shares it. I mean, I watched a video the other day on TikTok. It was funny, but it was disturbing at the same time. They were showing all the different news media outlets, and they were literally, not figuratively, literally reading the same exact news across like 30 different broadcasting affiliates. Everybody was saying word for word the same thing, because they were able to play the video on top of the video, on top of video, on top of video, and everybody was saying the same shit. That's crazy. And I think the video was saying something like, there's five major forces in the world that are influencing the media. And then that's what they showed, was this video of that kind of influence. And it was like, holy shit. I mean, we have no chance in hell if that's really what's going on. How are you supposed to get the real information if whatever is being fed to us is just dictated by some corporate mass or corporate entity that's got, you know, not our best interests at heart? It's really, man, it's a real shit show out there. And that really sucks. And I guess if I could just vanish away into a synthwave world with my family, that would be awesome. You know, we could go back where everything was neon and happy and fun. And I guess, you know, maybe this isn't that big of a thing, because when I was a kid, I know that there was political strife and there were all these things going on during the Cold War and all that. I don't remember any of that. I was a kid. None of that affected me. And we seemed to come out on the other end fine. So maybe this isn't something so catastrophic. I'm just at a different point in my life where these types of things are front and center for me, and I'm paying attention to this because I have a stake in the game and I have children and a family and all that shit matters. So this matters to me now, where when I was 10 years old, none of it mattered. I was busy, you know, worrying about what kind of pads I was going to put on my BMX bike, or what color mag wheels I wanted to get, or, you know, something arbitrary that a kid would care about, not politics necessarily. So I don't really know what the Carter years and the Reagan years and all the shit that went on then. I don't really know, you know, even though I was alive for all that, it really didn't affect me the way that, you know, this kind of stuff is affecting me. But at the same time, we also didn't have the same kind of sharing of information or transparency of information, both good and bad, that we do today. The internet didn't exist back then. Well, it did, but it only existed for military and science. It had nothing to do with the public sector. So I didn't have this kind of information. We had newspapers and you know, whatever news, four news channels that were ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN that may have existed back then, and that was it. So yeah, it's a crazy time, I guess, but maybe it isn't. Maybe this is all for nothing. Maybe this is just, we're reaching a point and this is the apex and we're, you know, something's going to change and society will move in a different direction and this is how it's going to go. And I don't know. I mean, you know, if you want to look at things into perspective or put things into perspective, at least you're not in Afghanistan, you know, and if you're listening to this and you are, you know, Godspeed, I hope everything, you know, works out for you. Because it really is being broadcast now and shown that it's a real shit show over there and things did not go well when we pulled out. And it's just a matter of time before things that are, you know, horrific things come to pass. And I really hope that we, you know, don't see that happen. Maybe the Taliban can really, you know, have changed and seen some ways to have improved itself, you know, not changed its core values, because I think that's, you know, what it's built upon principally, but maybe treating people differently or not so savagely, or, you know, honestly, I can't even talk about this. I have no idea what Sharia law is or any of that. I don't know what that means. I know what it's been said to mean, but I really don't know what it means. So it's very much unfair to judge that. I don't know what it means. You know, and if it's terrible, it's terrible. It's really not for me to judge. I don't live in that country. I'm just saying that it's horrible to see what's going on there. And if I'm looking at something as a point of contrast for how bad it is in America, it's pretty rough over there at this point. I don't know that that's a better situation. So sometimes even if your situation looks bad, there may be a lot of situations around you that look much worse. Anyway, on that, man, I'm going to put in an outro. Actually, maybe I shouldn't put in the outro. Should I read a poem? What do you think? I read a poem every time. Where am I? Let's see. Okay. So I'll read. Yeah, these are short. From Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett Michael Conklin. This one's called Daisy. Missed it again, just like the times before. It's sadder than you'd think, my guilt forevermore. Reflection is a curse. I can feel all I've done wrong. Looking back at me like a sad song's verse, different but the same old song. Will we meet again? You always come back for more. Greeted with love and excitement, I blamed you for my every indictment. Never once were you deserving of anything less than my humble serving, but only once in a while did I not defile and treat you with love so over-deserving. And now that you're gone, I can't hear your song. I'm sorry for all that I've done wrong. Goodbye, my friend, so long. Holy crap, I'm actually going to break down. Sorry. Ow, that one hurt quite a bit. That was about one of our dogs. And her name was Daisy. And she was a black lab. Ah, shit. And I treated her really badly. And that was awful. And I'll forever regret that. And I'm so sorry that I did those things. Yeah, I'm not in any way, shape, or form a great person. I've done a lot of really bad stuff in my life. And treating a dog that all that it ever wanted from you was love and to be paid attention to and be played with and be a part of your life and to have treated it badly. That's a real shit thing to have to live with. Ouch. So yeah, there are some real poems in this book that will strike a chord for me anyway. Daisy, I love you. I'm so sorry for everything that I did to you, to Sasha, to everybody else that we had, all you other dogs that we had that were such just sweet little animals. Wow. Ow, that was really painful. Well, sorry I had to end it on that kind of a note. I didn't really mean for that to happen, but hey, this is a real podcast, people. This isn't some joke. This is really me sharing who I really am. So sometimes this kind of thing happens, and you know, it is what it is. Anyway, I'm going to start playing my cool music now as an outro, and you know, thanks for listening. Sorry to end it on a somber note like that, but you know, if you take anything away from that, you know, live each and every day to its fullest and do the right things out there. Make good choices. Love the things and those people that are around you. You know, animals are, you know, I talk about Bella a lot now because of the way that I've been with some of the other pets that we've had in our past. And, you know, I'm trying to be a better person and not be such a piece of shit. And it's hard not to be the better person, but it's hard to think back on the way that I acted and treated and nothing I can do about it now, but just be sorry for it. Okay, that's it. Enjoy your weekend. Not sure if I'll do one tomorrow, but if not, I'll talk to y'all Monday.